I'm really excited to present to you tonight Dr. Roland McCrady, who is the Director of Research at the Institute of Heart Math. Roland and I have been working together in the Whole Heart Math mission since before 1990, when the Institute was officially started. And it's just been a very exciting adventure looking at the research into the heart and the brain, how they talk to each other, and then looking at the implications as we change emotional state on our health and well-being, and as we get into states of coherence, how that impacts our perception and performance. And of course, we have a whole booklet called Coherence Can Improve and Enhance Prayer and Meditation and Intentions. But today we're going to talk about some exciting new research about emotional states and their effect on the energetic fields around us. And before we start, I thought we should begin with a quick coherence technique that we can all practice together. We've probably all had busy days. So you all know the technique. Let's take a moment out and let's practice together. Let's first focus our attention in the area of the heart. Pretend like we're breathing through our heart, doing heart-focused breathing as we keep our attention in the heart area. Slowly and deeply in through the heart, out through the heart or chest area, about a count of five or six. Now let's add the third step, heart-focused breathing, and now heart feeling. Continue to breathe through the heart. Let's activate a feeling of appreciation for ourselves and for each other. We've been practicing quick coherence, and that builds our individual coherence, and we learned a little bit about the science behind that, our course so far. Now I'd like to introduce Roland, and he's going to talk a little bit more about how do we bridge individual coherence into a wider realm. What happened when we were just doing that quick coherence technique together, and how may that be impacting others? But before I do, I just want to say a few more words about Roland. He's involved in some of the most exciting research on what we call energetic research in the energetic fields of how our thoughts and emotions impact our body, our health, our cognitive function, but also each other, and in fact how they may be impacting the planet. And Roland's headed up and led the research initiatives at the Institute of Heart Math since we started, and actually helped establish coherence as a real mainstream contact. In fact, the Alternative Therapy and Health and Medicine Journal in July-August issue 2010 devoted the entire issue on independent research on coherence. So without further ado, Roland, why don't you go ahead?
Well, thank you, Demi, and good day to everyone. I'm not quite sure where to start, but we'll just dive in. When we talk about how you did, I think, a very good summary, Debbie, of how coherence has a lot of individual benefits in terms of our own personal health and our wellness and improved cognitive functions and so on that I'm sure you and Howard have been covering. But what I thought I would do is bridge that on out into how that it affects us, the social relationships we have, as well as you mentioned, a potential planetary influence and effect. So what probably a good place to start would be just kind of reviewing some of the studies that we did here in our laboratory, you know, quite a few years ago now, where we were looking at the interactions between people and between people and animals and so on. So we know that the heart, whenever the heart beats, it generates the largest rhythmic electromagnetic field in the body. In the magnetic domain, that field, just as a reference, is about 5,000 times greater than the magnetic field produced by the brain. And with today's equipment, we can measure the heart, the field of the heart, about 3 feet away from the body. And you can measure a brain wave of about an inch, just to give a comparison there. So it's quite a large field. And once we started measuring some of this, we developed some techniques for looking to see if one person's nervous system was tuned into and was detecting and could it be affected by the cardiac fields of another person. And that was actually surprisingly easy to do. And so we've got a lot of fun examples now of how when a person's in a coherent state, of course, then we can measure a change in the magnetic field that's being radiated, I mean, a literal measurable change. And we're able to show that, indeed, other people and animals and so on do, or are sensitive to that and are affected by those fields. For example, we can fairly easily show that one person's brain waves will synchronize to another person's heartbeat. And what was really fascinating is we've done that up to 5 feet away, which is several feet farther than a very expensive $40,000 magnetometer can measure. So our nervous systems are exquisitely tuned into and sensitive to the fields of other people. So this helps explain the mechanism of what most people experienced when you go visit a friend or something like that, or go into a certain environment, that sometimes you can just feel that something's off. And then sure enough, you find out, you know, that there's been an argument or something that just happened. You know, of course, I'm talking about before you catch body language cues and tone of voice signals. And the opposite is also true, that some people, this feels really good to be around. And those tend to be more coherent fields, more heart-centered people. And in fact, in a recent study, and it was part of that issue that you mentioned, a special issue on coherence, one of the studies that was done, independent study, a very, very good study, actually, was done looking at the effect, if somebody's in coherence, does that have a measurable effect on helping somebody else get into a coherent state? And in that study, they were able to show that a pretty high ratio of the cases, that was, in fact, the case. But then that study went on to show that there was also a literal synchronization that was occurring between people's heart rhythms, but far more complex than what we would have guessed. So there's a great baseline body of literature now to show that we are not only admitting these cardiac fields, which are modulated by our emotions and what we're feeling, but that our nervous systems are very sensitive to detecting those fields and thus the emotions that somebody else might be experiencing.
Roland, let me ask you a question. I think that one of the challenges we have in the lab, isn't it, is the type of instrumentation, because the measurements you've been talking about or this other paper talked about, I imagine people were probably fairly near each other, not like across the planet or something.
Well,
is
that's
that
correct. That's true. So these kinds of studies we're talking about are more local and can be explained through conventional physics mechanisms. So they're actually very safe studies, although they're kind of stretchy for a lot of people that don't consider these kinds of things. You can't write them off by saying that's impossible, because we can measure these fields and see the effects. Now, that isn't to say that there aren't also non-local connections. And that's a whole other topic and one that we probably need to bridge into. We've certainly done experiments that show the non-locality of connection as well. For example, one that I'd heard about for a long time was if you take a person's cells and put electrodes in the cells to measure their electrical response, and then the donor is miles away, that the cells would respond when the donor had a large emotional issue or something that was going on. So we actually did duplicate some of those. I'd heard about them, but could never find the data, never really see the actual work. So we did it in our own lab here, and sure enough, it really did work. In fact, I was amazed at how synchronized the cells were to. And again, it's the emotional response. It's not whether it's plants, trees, cells, whatever, the responses seem to be to the emotionality, to an emotional change in what mediates the connection. And we saw that very clearly. And that experiment was 10-mile distance. So that takes us more into showing that this stuff does happen non-locally, as well as in what can be explained through local fields and things.
When we're all talking on the phone now, like everyone's listening, you're talking, we did quick coherence, the technique together. We're obviously, some of it, people on the line may be in a different country, but we're all connected through the phone system and through voice. And yet we're practicing that heart coherence tool, and it's tangible. You can feel, you feel people's heart energetically on the line. How would you interpret that scientifically? I'm sure many people wonder what's happening there.
Well, that you're starting to bridge into now some of the scientific hypotheses that were setting up studies, hopefully to be able to put scientific answers to, at least to increase the data that shows that. Well, basically, the first hypothesis is that all living things are interconnected, and that we communicate with each other via biological and electromagnetic fields, both local and non-local. So sure that we are certainly connected through, you know, our voice over the phone lines, but whenever we are tuned in to somebody else at an emotional level, and in fact, I should mention in that study I mentioned a few minutes ago, that one of the important mediators of that effect was how well people liked each other, whether they were kind of had a positive emotional relationship with each other. That's a huge factor in these things. So then the second hypothesis is that not only are we affected, and I'm talking about the Global Coherence Project now initiative, that is that not only are we interacting with each other, but we also interact with the planet's fields as well. So it's really the collective consciousness and emotionality of all of us here on the planet that create kind of a planetary environmental field that we can tune into if we choose to do so. Hope I answered.
So, yeah, that's great. So if we are practicing heart lock-in, like people learn, or quick coherence, and we're really sending our heart energy into the field, we're moving now from the social coherence, because we know some research that you've been describing very, very briefly. How can that move into more of the global impact, where our prayers or meditations or intentions may have an effect on the Earth's fields, or the Earth's fields may have an effect on us? And how is all this dynamic impacting us in the shift going on right now?
Well, there's several things we can do to increase the effectiveness, or you could think of as the power of such intentions. And one of them is doing it together, collectively. So there's an additive effect. Well, it's really more than additive. So in other words, we can amplify our heart-focused intentions and coherence. So this, one of the ways that there's actually experimental evidence to suggest now is that this occurs in groups that have an emotional resonance. So again, we like each other, where there's a positive emotional connection. So if you think about it, of course it all starts at the individual level. A person has to be able to maintain their own coherence. And I'm not just talking about heart wave coherence, I'm really talking about their mental emotional coherence, which is reflected in our heart rhythm patterns. So once we're more coherent, we are literally radiating a more coherent field, which, as I mentioned earlier, makes it easier for others around us to find their center and come into coherence. So as multiple people do that and are stable in their own coherence, their fields connect, and that makes a stronger field. Now, that makes it easier for them because they're tapped into a self-reinforcing field, which amplifies, you know, the effects. It makes it easier for more and more people. So the more people that join into that coherent field create a more stable and a larger field, making it much easier for those that come next. So as groups around the planet do that, I call it creating more coherent classrooms, workplaces, communities. As more and more communities and groups become coherent, their fields join, and that starts creating a more of a planetary field environment. There's more answers to that, but that's at least an initial answer.
So what I'm hearing you say in there, too, is that as we do this more collectively, and in the field, the heart coherence, the mental emotional coherence is that we will amplify each other's prayers and meditations and intentions, that there's power in that collective coherence.
Right. Basically, that's exactly correct, which is the third major hypothesis in the Global Coherence Initiative, which is that large numbers of people who are intentionally creating heart coherent states of care, love, compassion, and so on, generate a what we call coherent standing wave that can then help offset the current planetary stress wave and create a more coherent environment that makes it easier for others.
So what happens with the planetary stress wave? You mentioned that. Does that get also amplified as more and more people have, you know, fears too? Does it work both ways? And how can we, you know, how do we know how that's affecting us?
Well, there's actually some pretty intriguing data on the stress wave side of that for sure. A lot of the listeners might be familiar with Roger Nelson's group in the Global Consciousness Project, as it's called. And just to give a little history here, there's about a 50-year history now of some physicists and things finding that it's human emotionality, emotional states, somehow, it's still a kind of a mystery of the mechanism, but it's pretty clear that this actually happens, will interact with quantum processes. You know, a good way to do this is with systems that are supposedly random, like the decay rate of a radioactive isotope, for example. It's supposed to be completely random and normally is. And there's also electronic devices that are made to be random number generators are called. Yet in the presence of strong human emotion, those devices have a subtle but measurable coherence that's induced into them, so they're not as random anymore. So this led to the development of the Global Coherence Project, which is a global network of these random number generator devices. And there's over 300 what they call formal events that have been analyzed now that show that an event on the planet that creates a large emotional stir, you know, a kind of a global or a large scale anyway, affects this whole global network, not just locally where the event takes place. And it's an important part of that project is what's being looked at is the correlated activity of the whole global network. So that's how we can really say that this is a global effect, these stress waves. And then a second way that we've seen it reflected is actually in the Earth's magnetic field itself. So there's on the Global Coherence Initiative site, for example, some examples. One good example of that occurred during the terrorist attacks on 9/11. And exactly in time with the first attacks, there's a very noticeable and huge spike that you can actually see right in the raw data in the Earth's magnetic fields. And these were being measured 22,000 miles out in space by satellites. And then in the days following that, the field is noticeably more incoherent than in the days preceding it. And then if we think back to what the emotional environment on the planet was like after that, it's a pretty obvious correlation there, even though I can't say this proves anything, because from a scientific perspective, you have to have multiple measurements and things like that, which is what we're really in the process of doing.
So the effect of the stress wave, obviously, on human health and well-being, largely through emotional state, is obvious to, I think, a lot of us. And the fact that we can collectively create positive emotional states and create maybe a heart wave or a coherence wave is where we have a lot of hope of offsetting a lot of that. You had showed me a slide once showing that from the Global Consciousness Project, from Roger's work, showing about, you know, the effect of positive emotion versus the negative emotion on the random generator.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, that's one of my favorite pieces of work that's come out of that project. And out of the, at the time this was done, I think there were 180 events that had been formally analyzed. And what Roger did was have some several reviewers go through those events and categorize them by their level of love and compassion. So like a global peace day, for example, would be obviously an event high in love and compassion, or meditation day, these types of things. Then he had three bins, those high in love and compassion, those in medium, and that could have been a football game, a Super Bowl or something, where you got half the country, you know, going for one team and the other, etc. And those low in love and compassion, like a terrorist attack or something like that. And then when he analyzed the data according to those categories, the effects that were the by far the largest effects on the global system were those high in love and compassion. And it was a significant effect, almost double the effect of those low in love and compassion, which actually makes sense when you think about it, because when you we're in a more compassionate or loving state, we're more coherent. And just to give an example here of why coherence is so important, most people have heard about or seen demonstrations of resonance, like where you take two tuning forks and you, you know, you tap one and vibrate it, and the other one will start to vibrate in a resonance with it, that there's an energy transfer there. And of course, in that case, it's through sound waves. The same principles apply on the energetic level. So what's often not talked about is that the tuning forks are very highly coherent systems, or guitar strings or whatever example you want to use. So it's coherence actually enables resonance to occur. You can also think of it that it's coherence that organizes noise and brings that, you know, random noisy energy into coherence, so it can have impact and effect. Hope that answered your question, Debbie.
No, that's wonderful. You know, so what you're saying there is that resonating coherent individuals, and then more coherence between individuals and social groups, can create this resonating wave, like a whole lot of tuning forks of putting compassion and care and love and the positive emotions that create coherence out to the planet.
Exactly.
And that should have a much stronger effect than the stress and negative emotions.
Exactly.
Isn't that very exciting for all of us who I know are looking for or have found our own purpose and how we can contribute to the shift and the new way of living and creating a new world? One of the things that maybe you could talk a little bit more about is how the ionosphere might be able to, how it affects us, how it might, you know, facilitate that with the resonances.
Absolutely. I mean, there's actually a surprising amount of research when one actually looks into it that shows that us humans are affected in a global scale by changes in the Earth's energetic systems. And by energetic systems, there are several. One is the geomagnetic field, and that's the thing that our compasses tune into, right? The kind of like you could visualize it as a giant bar magnet in the center of the Earth. Of course, it's not really that way, but it's a stationary field like you would see around a bar magnet. So that field is absolutely critical for life on Earth. It's our first and major line of defense against the solar wind, it's called, which are the particles, not the light, but the stuff, you know, highly ionized particles spewing off of the sun. So without that, there could be no life here on the planet. But if you think of that magnetic field, as these flux lines, as they're called, and if you visualize, if you ever see the charts that show the shape of the magnetic field as guitar strings, it's because they're actually very much like that are stretched going out from the North Pole and coming back in the South Pole and so on all around the planet. When they interact with the solar wind, it causes them to vibrate, even though the field itself is a static or a stationary field. And those fields have different resonant modes, those just like a guitar string would, depending on how long it is and how tight it is and so on. And as it turns out, in fact, this is what we're doing on the Global Coherence Initiative, is putting monitoring stations around the planet to measure these and the ionospheric fields as well. When those, the resonant modes of those vibrating fields are overlap and are almost exactly the same as the heart rhythms. And in fact, one of the primary modes is 0.1 hertz, which is exactly the same frequency as the coherent heart rhythm is when we're in a coherent state. So what I'm saying there is that on a planetary scale, it is vibrating away, singing, if you will, overlapping the same frequencies as the human heart. And the other thing, that the other main source of energetics that have big impacts on humans here on the planet are the fields generated by the ionosphere. The ionosphere you can think of as a big, kind of like a soap bubble, that again is critical for life on Earth. And the ionosphere starts about 50 miles up from the surface of the planet, and kind of the bottom layer is the ozone layer, about that high. And then it goes out to about 200 and 250 miles, somewhere in there, depending upon whether it's the day or night side of the planet. And this is a layer of highly charged ions, which is why it's called the ionosphere. And there are amazingly strong current flows flowing around the Earth in the ionosphere. And whenever you have a flow of current, that gives rise to magnetic fields. And there are very complex patterns, spiral-shaped patterns going on, big figure eights kind of at a global scale going on in the ionosphere, for example, and other kinds of currents going around in the ionosphere. And then there's also a cavity that's formed between the surface of the Earth and the bottom of the ionosphere that is a resonant chamber that magnetic waves are set up in and are always there, kind of traveling around the planet. And those are called Schumann resonances, after the German who first predicted, a German biophysicist who first predicted their existence. And as it turns out, there's eight of these Schumann resonant frequencies, and the first one is 7.8 hertz. So anybody who's listening that has a physiology background or does biofeedback, those kinds of things, would know that that's right in the bottom of the range of the human brainwave, of the alpha rhythm. Well, so that's an easy one to recognize, but all eight of the resonances overlap with human brainwave frequencies. So the planet is really singing 24/7, depending upon which mode we're talking about, in the same frequencies as the human brain and the human heart. So that makes it, for a lot of people, not a big jump to understand how changes or disturbances in the Earth's fields, these energetic fields, could affect us. And that's exactly what does happen. And there's a lot of research to show this. A lot of our physiological rhythms, for example, are synchronized to these rhythms at the planetary scale. Our blood pressure rhythms, heart rhythms, for example, sync to the planet. Hormonal rhythms, things like that. So when that field gets disturbed, whether it's through stress waves or solar flares, whatever, that the correlations that we see here on Earth are that we get more edgy, get angry quicker, start getting confused easier. We're more fatigued, for example. These are one of the studies we did last year that found all of these things in a fairly large study that kind of confirmed other studies as well. So when the Earth's energetic systems are disturbed and incoherent, that's when we tend to get in more arguments, more traffic accidents, and you'll start fights and things like that. So it really requires us to be more self-managed, to be, you know, self-regulated from a more coherent inner baseline or reference point, so that we're not victimized by these external fields, because we really don't have to be, especially if we understand them and have the self-regulation power to basically take charge of ourselves and respond differently than has happened in the past when these things happen. And this is timely, actually, because in the last couple of days and right now, we are in the middle of a geomagnetic storm that was caused by a large solar flare. In fact, it's the largest disturbance that's occurred in 4 years. So we're in the middle of one right now. So it's a really good time to be mindful of going to the heart and maintaining our own personal coherence.
Yeah, it's all over the CNN website, and apparently there's more coming, according to what I just read on the website today, of these large solar flares that they can affect the electric grid. I mean, everyone's got their backup systems, and airlines are being redirected, traffic, so that they avoid the most vulnerable places in the as the airplanes fly. That was all over CNN, so this could last a little while, so it sounds like the potential for more chaos and excitability, you know, in the Mideast or elsewhere, as well as in our own nervous systems, could be amplified, as well as the potential for us to be more heart coherent, and can we impact these fields in a positive way, these resonances?
Right, absolutely. Now, it's worth mentioning here, too, Debbie, that, well, the solar cycle, you know, where the flares, solar flares and coronal mass ejections, as they're called, occur, is basically a 10.5-year cycle. And we're in the upslope now of what's called cycle 24, so they're going to go on for a while, a couple years anyway. But I don't want that to scare anyone, because if what I said earlier, that is all true. But if we look historically, the greatest periods of human flourishing and creativity, new scientific discovery, you know, flourishing of the arts and music, and all of these great, great periods have also correlate with these things, these same energetic influxes that occur with these uprises in the solar rhythm. So yeah, the field can be more disturbed and chaotic, and there is a literal energetic influx that's coming into our energetic systems and then through the heart and into the mind-brain system. So these energetic influxes, if we're not well self-regulated, that's when we go get in, you know, in fights and traffic accidents and get ill at each other and those kinds of things. But properly channeled, that same energy can be used to create more connections, more collaborative relationships, more intuitions to help solve the problems we have and so on. So it's a good thing, not just a bad thing. It just really depends on how well we are able to utilize these energetic influxes, whether they're from the sun or other cosmic sources or at a lower level of the moon cycle.
Well, I think it's interesting how right now we're coming right into the full moon. I think it's tonight or tomorrow. The solar flares impact is the big one that's at its peak. Then we have this planetary event that's really occurring in the Mideast. When you think of how the excitement is around of a peaceful uprising in Egypt so far and how that's inspiring other countries, but it sounds like that excitability could go either way, and it's important for us to be putting out heart and heart coherence into the field to possibly facilitate that.
Absolutely. And so I know I've certainly been doing lock-ins towards that, as I know you have, with the intent of my energy really helping them find whatever the appropriate balance and stability is that they need, you know, rather than trying to impose my particular opinions on what would be right or wrong for them, as it's a much more complex thing than a lot of us might understand, but creating the heart energy that would really help them find balance and stability through the process they're going through.
I don't know if everyone who's on the call, I know Howard mentioned at one of our classes, the Global Coherence Initiative has a global care room where people go to do heart lock-ins, and there's a care focus that we put out from time to time wherever the planetary need is, like to send heart energy to Haiti a year ago, and different planetary events, whether it's earthquakes or whether it's something very positive we want to energize. And right now we just put out an invite to everyone who is a member of the Global Care Room, all 30,000 people, to come into, who are a member of the Global Coherence Initiative, to come to the Global Care Room at a synchronized time, the full moon. There's three different times so that people all over the world can find somebody there at one of those three times that would fit their time zone to actually create a heart field environment, putting out coherent heart care and compassion and love and appreciation for the amount of peace there's been so far in this transition in the Mideast, and create a heart field environment of unconditional love over that whole area. And so that's happening, you know, tonight at 8 o'clock, I think, and tomorrow at noon and 4 a.m. as well. And if anyone wants to join in that, you can go to glcoherence.org. That's the website. And it's all free. Just register if you're not a member yet, and you can enter the Global Care Room. And I also know that the Shift Network has got an event on Saturday called the Planetary Wave of Peace for the Mideast, where James O'Dee's facilitating. So there is a momentum for more and more of us to come together and really create in a positive way. And whether it's with social media or websites, or you can feel the movement happening. And I think a lot of us are feeling that we want to keep the positive energetics and, you know, feed the field with our love and care and coherence to help facilitate this shift as much as we can, and exciting to be part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. The Global Clutter Room is really fun because it's when you log in, a little light shows up on the globe where you are. So you get to see your own little dot show up and who else is participating globally. And I think there are, I forget now, members from close to 80 different countries who are members of that initiative. So it's really fun to see the little dots all over the world coming together in heart coherence to send their focus, care, and intentions to areas in need.
Right.
And this ties in, if I may, to what we're doing on the science side, because without a community who's doing work to create heart coherence on a large scale like this, that's absolutely a critical step for us on the science side, and where we're wanting to measure these effects. So ultimately, this will take some time to get all this set up, of course. Although we're already doing monitoring, we have a monitoring site here in Boulder Creek, California, and we put one in. We're able to install one in Saudi Arabia last year. So those two sites are active and recording data 24/7, and we'll be installing two more sites in the coming months here, one in the UK and one in the New York area. And then we hope to, by the end of the year or early next year, get one in South Africa. But that's monitoring the effects of us putting out the coherent heart. So ultimately we'll be able to have people that have web-connected devices, M-Wave-type devices, to monitor the coherence of everybody participating and be able to, well, this is our intention anyway, to be able to correlate the human coherence in a measured way with measured changes in the Earth's energetics, and then eventually be able to measure changes in and correlate all this and how that affects physical things, you know, or the mental emotional natures of large regions and things, whether that be crime rates, things like that's been done, but other type things, hospital admissions, car accidents, things like that. There will be indicators of that, of changes in those types of things in the long term. So that's just to give people an idea of the long term goals of what we're doing on the research side in the Global Coherence Initiative.
Well, I think it's very interesting and exciting that we have a global coherence monitoring system right in the Mideast right now. I don't know if we can tell anything locally. Certainly last Friday was a huge upwelling of joy in Egypt and throughout the world. It'll be interesting to, when you get a chance to analyze that data, or Roger does, to see if we see anything whatsoever. But can you just say a little bit more about what a monitoring system is? What did you install over there in Saudi Arabia?
Sure. Well, the monitoring system is basically extremely sensitive magnetometers that are designed, everything about them is designed to tune into and measure the types of fields I described earlier, the resonances occurring in the geomagnetic field lines, and those are called technically structural field line resonances, not that anybody cares about that, and the Schumann resonances, and then some higher frequency stuff that also goes on. So that was no small feat to get these types of sensors that have that kind of a bandwidth, and I don't want to use too technical terms here, but that measure a wide range of frequencies and are accurate across that range of frequencies and are insensitive to large changes in temperature and other type of environmental factors, so that our signals are always stable and accurate, and then getting that data back here to the lab in California. So that's it was the first couple of years of the project, was just getting the sensitivity, all the technological issues worked out. And just to give people an idea of the sensitivity of these things, whenever you move a piece of steel or iron, any kind of magnetic material through the Earth's magnetic fields, that generates a secondary field that can be detected. So these magnetometers that we were installing are so sensitive that if you had a steel fence post 10 feet away from a site, and raindrops hitting it, the detector would see that. because of that, how this, the effect of the water hitting the steel pole. So they're extremely sensitive. They're among some of the most sensitive magnetometers that can be made, actually, right now. So that's the kind of hard to describe what they look like, but they're there's three of these devices, magnetometers at each site, one that measures the north and south axis, one the east and west, and one the vertical. And then they're basically buried. The magnetometers themselves are about 3 feet underground for a lot of reasons, but that's kind of what a site looks like.
Well, it's so exciting that science, and I know what we're doing here at HeartMath is just one part of a kind of a scientific movement happening increasingly in other research centers throughout the world, is being able to really see what these energetic systems, ourselves as an energetic system, collective energetics, and the planetary energetics might be doing in impacting the environment, and how we can impact that collectively, how humans can come together to really co-create in a positive way in this shift and have the science there to facilitate us. It's really exciting to me.
Me too.
Why don't we open up some questions right now for those of you, I'm sure you've been sitting there with a lot of questions for Roland about all of this. I know science can sound a little complex. Why don't you, raise your hand. Is Ben still here?
Yeah, I'm right here. Why don't people hit 1 if they have a question? And if you're on the webcast, feel free to stick a question on the webcast as well. Okay. So we have Janice, you're live.
Hi.
Hi, Janice.
Hi, Janice.
Hi. I just want to know if there's any experimentation being done with coherency within a city. When we talk about the global things, I get so excited, and then I start thinking, oh, what if we were to do some sort of coherency synchronization within, like, my village of Rochester, New York,
uh-huh.
around some of the, the really troubled things that have happened in our city. Have there been any experiments with that?
Not the kind I think you're asking about. It's interesting that I mentioned that we're going to be putting a site later in the year in New York. It's actually not too far from Rochester. It's in upstate New York is where the site will be going.
Oh, great.
But just by coincidence. But the sites themselves won't necessarily be measuring a local city, because we're looking at global scale things,
things
that are occurring in the, big scales. But I think the kind of project that you're thinking of would be wonderful to do, because that's really moving towards more of the social coherence I'm talking about, by creating more coherence in our communities, in our workplaces, schools, and communities. And I have absolutely no doubt that if that could be done in a way that we would see huge improvements in the social measures, crime rates and all kinds of things that would go on in a local community as people became more cooperative and collaborative and the natural benefits and outplays of coherence.
And are there ways of measuring it scientifically? I mean, we have a lot of research kinds of organizations in our village. Are there ways that you could envision this? Obviously, the results that would be happening within a community would be one measure, but is there anything that would be measuring the field on a scientific level that
Well, potentially, again, and I'd say we don't know yet, but potentially that would show up in the random number generator system, which we also have. We've been part of that project almost since its beginning. Our lab is one of the sites for the random number generators, as each of the global coherence sites. We have those devices installed there, so we have a very strong collaboration with that project. So it could potentially show up in the local random number generator system, and or it has the potential, if it was really a large-scale shift in coherence, to affect the magnetic field domain, which we're detecting.
Wow.
I mean, that's what the project's all about, to find out, can we really see when large numbers of people create coherent fields, how is that going to show up, and how can we measure that in the larger planetary field environment? So that would be wonderful if that could happen, especially since we got a site local to you.
yes.
will have. Yeah.
Thank you so much for everything you're doing.
That's great.
Great.
Any other questions?
Yeah, we have a question here from the webcast from Michael, who's asking if you could say a bit more about the correlation between the atmospheric energy and the solar flares and sort of the up-leveling of human ingenuity and creativity, if there's any reason for that.
Okay. I'm trying to think how to best answer that. There's no question that, let's say, a solar event that affects the ionospheric, both the Earth's magnetic fields and the activity in the ionosphere. We clearly see that. So those solar inputs are an energetic influx into the planetary system that eventually translates down into humans and human consciousness. So it's usually change has some type of disturbance that goes with it. You know, you've got to kind of break up the old structures for the new to emerge. And it's kind of parallel to that. So when we have these energetic influxes, it's unconscious, but there really is an energy influx that goes on. So it really gets down to us depending on how we choose to respond to them. Because these energetic influxes can be a great add-on to us and humanity, or they, you know, if we're, again, not self-regulated, they can manifest in not knowing what to do with that energy, and we get more irritated and things. So basically, from these through my eyes, it really gets down to us having to take responsibility for our own energy and elect to use the creative energy influxes to create these deeper connections and more caring interactions with each other, you know, and the Earth itself. So I hope I've answered the question. But you can just think of it primarily as something disturbing, you know, when the energy influxes come in that causes a disturbance in the energetic fields of the planet, which we're embedded within.
Great. Thank you. I just want to reiterate to people on the phone, just hit 1 if you have a call or if you have a question. And here we have Allison, you're last.
Hi. My question, we've been talking a lot about correlation between energetic influx and events and creativity that come out of it. Have there been correlations done with negative events as well, like major wars, things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. I was kind of alluding to that, earlier. In fact, one of the first real scientific publications and studies of the interaction between solar, especially solar activity and human activity, was actually done by a Russian professor of astronomy and actually in biological physics, a guy named Alexander Testovsky. And he observed during World War I that during solar flares and disturbed solar and magnetic activity, that the battles and stuff were more bloody and crazy and things. So that prompted him to do an amazing study. I think it's amazing for when they that doing this back in the 1920s before we had internets and things, study of human history. And he was able to go all the way back to, 1749, I believe. And what he did is he did a global study of history and determined in great detail major human events. Now, that could be the start of a war, a major war, a revolution, a major scientific discovery, and so on. And then he plotted the number of major events for each year and did that back to the 1749 to 1926 when he first published his data. And, in fact, it's an amazing chart to see it when you're able to look at it. And then plotted the solar cycle on the same graph. And the two are almost identical. So it's really quite amazing to see that kind of a correlation. So in terms of wars, what the statistics end up being is that if you look at the onset of any major kind of war in recorded human history, 80% of them started in a very specific phase of the solar cycle.
Wow. Would you know how to find that study if I wanted to look at it more carefully?
Yes. Most of it's published in Russian. I've been reading some of the translated work, if you're talking about his work, but there's actually a lot of work on this. since then. This has been verified many times. That particular article is published in a journal that's no longer exists called Cycles. The publication, the translated version of this 1926 paper. But the other person who's done a lot more modern work on it, who's been able to correlate these kinds of same geomagnetic changes in activity to terrorism even, and things like that, is a guy named Dr. Franz Hallberg. And that's a name that most of you probably wouldn't be familiar with, but I bet everybody listening knows the term circadian rhythm. And Dr. Hallberg is literally the man who coined that term back in the late 50s, around 1950. And in fact, he's on our advisory board for the Global Coherence Initiative, and we do a lot of collaborations and things together. So he's got a voluminous literature, actually, on the links between human, especially on the biological side, but also things like terrorism and traffic accidents and things like that that he's published over the last 30 years or so. So if you just did a Google on Franz Hallberg, you'd probably come up with more than you care to read.
Great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Great. Thank you, Allison. Next up we have Linda. Linda, you're live.
Hi. My question had to do, I guess, similar, but I wondered, Deborah mentioned the full moon, activity during the full moon, and I wondered what the what effects activities would have, what would be the differences between the full moon, the new moon, summer solstice, or maybe eclipses, and like that. Thank you.
Yeah, I really can't answer that in too in-depth, but it's clear, at least from actually some of the work that I just mentioned, that Dr. Hallberg is starting to publish right now of lunar effects, because it's pretty common knowledge and perception. And I think there was something I was reading just in the last couple of weeks, interviews with emergency workers and hospital staff, that they absolutely know that the moon effects, new moon, full moon, have effects on people, although some of the scientific explorations into it haven't found strong correlations. I just don't think they've looked at the right things, is my own opinion. And so there are certainly certain times of the year that the moon's going to have a bigger effect than others, like solstices and things like that. Now, we did do an analysis of 10 years of data from our random number generator that we have here at our facility that's part of the Global Coherence Global Consciousness Project, sorry. And we did find a significant effect on the random number generator system that correlated with the full moon, that when you look at it over enough cycles. And that's a pretty important statement, because it means that the moon is somehow modulating fundamental quantum processes, which are, underlie us, and really all matter. So there's more to it that's yet to be understood. I know that wasn't probably the kind of complete answer you were looking for, but it's about the best I can really do.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Linda. Let's see, we have another question coming in from the webcast, and actually it's a more personal question. They're asking, what are your personal practices throughout the day, or how do you incorporate the personal heart practices in a way that works best for you?
Is that to me or Debbie or both of us?
I suppose it could be to both of you.
I think he's probably asking you, Roland, because they're hearing a lot of it from me.
Okay.
They'll be hearing a lot more, too.
Well, I start each day with a heart lock-in. That's kind of prep for the day, so that I'm really going into the day from a more coherent and centered place and trying to connect more with my higher self or large. So I set that intention for the day. I also prep before any kind of a staff meeting or thing like that, take a minute and do a lock-in to prep. And life is life, so if something comes up, a grant gets denied or whatever, life goes on, that can be, not the way I wanted things to go. I'll shift and reset using a technique, and I also practice, at least do my best to remember to practice really connecting with people and during communication, and use one of the heart math techniques called coherent communication to make sure that I'm in my best coherent state to really be listening and hearing what the person's saying and responding from my more coherent place. And certainly in the scientific world, I use freeze frame a lot, these techniques to help access my own intuition and the choices we make in terms of what to study, not to study, and interpreting results and so on.
And I'm sure you use the state of ease. They learn the ease technique too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that reminds me of the thing that I know a lot of us around here practice. We call it in between. So in between things, walking to lunch, you know, or the photocopier or whatever, those in between moments, really, that's where I use really drawing in ease a lot. And again, I'm not perfect at it, but I certainly try and set an intention to remember to do that with increasing frequency to where it becomes my new baseline in normal state.
You know, I'd like to add one thing. You just reminded me, you know, the full moon, and it's really a good time to practice ease, especially with the solar flares. You know, I remind people to really go back to that technique, because you can find a flow, like get a ride through the full moon, like you're surfing through it. And if something, you know, knocks you out and you get upset by something, then the full moon energy in that period can feel like you've fallen off your surfboard and you're bumping around in the ocean. But I find that practicing the ease technique and really going deep in my heart and bringing in that feeling of ease can reset me back on my surfboard. So that's just one thing I can share that is important right now, I think, because of the moon.
That's a good add-on. In fact, that reminds me, for the lady who asked the question about the moon, one of our scientists here, Annette is her name, does commentaries to the Global Coherence Initiative every few, well, weeks, months, on a semi-regular basis. And the last commentary that she wrote was on some of the work and research around the moon phases. And, in fact, the data I was talking about when I answered that question is in that commentary. And for those that are interested in, there's a whole series of these commentaries that go much deeper into some of the things I've just been kind of giving highlights of that are really fascinating reads and written at a very easy-to-understand level, even though that's a geophysicist. He's able to write in very lay ways that are understandable. So there's all of those commentaries are on the website for the Global Coherence Initiative website for those that want to do more reading and in-depth understanding of what we're talking about.
And that website, again, is GL, the first two letters of global, glcoherence.org. Well, it's been always fun for me to hear the science reviewed by Roland again. And I know there's a lot of information conveyed. And I'm sure that if you have more questions or comments, you can go to the NING site and we'll be able to get to them, maybe not right away, but be able to respond there. I think we're about out of time, Ben, aren't we?
I think so, too.
Yeah, I think we're hitting 6 o'clock. So for those of you who want to stay on the call, I'm happy to put you into discussion groups of 4, and you can continue on for the evening. But thank you, both of you, Deborah and Roland. Thank you so much for tonight.
You're most
welcome.
Yeah, and I appreciate all of you taking your time out to listen to us talk about these things.